And now, I would like to introduce our next speaker, Dr. Jacqueline McCandless. Dr. Jacqueline McCandless is certified by the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology. She has practiced psychiatry in Southern California since 1966, specializing in relationship and women's therapy, sexual medicine, anti-aging, and alternative medicines. When her 13th grandchild, Chelsea, was diagnosed in 1996 with autism, she began studying the biomedical aspects of this disorder, and in 2003, she wrote, Children with Starving Brains, a Medical Treatment Guide for Autism Spectrum Disorder. Dr. McCandless now writes, consults, and teaches other physicians in the United States and abroad on the biomedical treatment of autism, and constantly is searching for more healing paths to treat this very complex disease, low-dose naltrexone being one of the more recent additions to her therapeutic armamentarium. I can't even say this word properly. Thank you. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Jacqueline McCandless.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I've spoken about this before to the autism people, but not to others, so it's an opportunity for me to expand. Let's see if I can get my PowerPoint going here. Okay. This is the young lady who got me into this in the first place. I was 65, thinking of retiring and writing sexy books on relationship from all the work I had done in sexual medicine all those years, when she was diagnosed at 2.5 with autism. And she had two older sisters who were beautiful, bright, wonderful, and perfect. So, of course, I knew nothing about autism at the time. But I dived into it and tried to find out as much as I could. And what I found out was devastating. The news was, there's not much hope, we don't really know why autism happens, and we don't have too much to do to help it. And I did not accept that at all. I learned very shortly when I got into it that a worldwide autism epidemic was happening. From 2001 to 2004, there was a 10,026% increase in full diagnosis of autistic school-age children per the U.S. Department of Education. Well, I know, and all of you know, that when they say it was because of genetics, we don't see genetic epidemics that surge like this. So I knew there was something else going on. Over 2 million children in the U.S. have autism, over 6 million have ADHD, and over 2 million take Ritalin. The incidence of classic autism, which used to be the autism that we would see, is 1 to 10,000. Now, the regressive autism that we're seeing in this epidemic that has happened in the last decade, 1 in 150 children, and since four of those to one are boys to girls, that gives you about 1 in 50 to 80 boys have autism from that decade. It's just now starting to go down for the first time in 30 years, so I'll tell you my point of view and many points of view of why this has happened.
If you could speak right into a microphone.
Sure.
And speak more loudly, yeah.
Sure. Okay, I'm just going to tell you a little bit about autism. Probably many of you know someone who has an autistic child, if you don't have yourself now, because it is so common. And some of the things that we see in the autistic kids are, and autism also includes HFA, which is high functioning autism, Asperger's syndrome, which are children who do not have any problem with speech. They're usually very brilliant. They're eccentric. Can you hear me now? But they have many of the characteristics of autistic children. They're often socially ostracized because they don't quite pick up nuances of language, but they're usually very brilliant. They'll usually pick one subject that they're rather focused, almost obsessively on, and in that subject they're great. So some of our computer experts and people who are scientific do have Asperger's, and they do very well because they're very well accomplished in a certain area of expertise. PDD means pervasive developmental disorder. ADD, of course, is attention deficit disorder and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Some of the characteristics of our autistic children: failure to bond, lack of social interaction, avoidance of eye-to-eye contact, difficulties in language development. Some kids never acquire speech at all. And they have repetitive behaviors, self-stimulation behaviors called stimming. On the biomedical level, these are sick kids. People think it's a psychological illness, a psychiatric illness. It is a medical illness, totally. There is a genetic predisposition. The families of people who have autistic children have a lot of allergies, autoimmunity. There's a lot of family history. I took a survey on one of my large internet groups. 30% of the mothers had fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, rheumatoid arthritis, diabetes, those kinds of autoimmune diseases. They show a weakened immune system, frequent infections. They have a lot of antibiotics their first year of life, and the immune tests show a lot of immune irregularities in these children. The millions of dollars that are spent on genetic research for autism, someone is looking for that one magic gene. We believe there are at least 16 to 20 genes involved in this extremely complex disease with many inner and outer factors. The kids get a lot of inflammation, gut infections, they have an impaired nutritional status, and the big point is they are unable to excrete and therefore they accumulate heavy metals in their bodies. So in 1991, it was mandated because of the AIDS problem. They thought that some of the AIDS mothers might not get their children hepatitis B vaccinations. So they mandated that every newborn would have a hepatitis B vaccination in their first few hours of life. And the hepatitis B vaccination contains a mercury compound called thimerosal, which is 49.7% mercury. Mercury is a neurotoxin of the worst degree, probably worse than anything other than plutonium. And it has a slow effect, so that in newborn babies, you give them a shot of a neurotoxin, and you don't actually know it until they start avoiding contact, they don't bond, it comes on very slowly. People who are not familiar with autism don't really understand what's the matter with their children. They don't care about strangers. They have no stranger anxiety. They'll go with anyone. They don't bond. They don't care about other children. They're not interested in people. They are really living in their own world. And it really is extremely painful when parents see their children just going away from them and not developing, particularly if they've already had other children that develop normally. So we do feel that the thimerosal in the vaccines were the main cause of the epidemic that started in 1991. And parents have a lot of history of their kids starting to scream with this vaccination, and then they would get the further vaccinations. They have to get one at newborn, another one at 3 months, another one at 6 months. And by the time they finish with their hepatitis B vaccination, they have had more mercury than the EPA allows for a 150-pound man. So it's a real poison. And the kids who have good immune systems manage to get by, and the ones who have any kind of immune predisposition in their family, or if they're preemies, or if the mother had a lot of amalgams in her mouth, or if the mother ate a lot of fish, tuna fish, every day while she was pregnant, various things. The kids, the fetuses, and the infants get a huge hit of mercury, and we do believe that that is the cause of the autism epidemic in the vaccines. The CDC, the IOM, they have protested violently, and I don't know if any of you were in the city yesterday. We had a huge rally and a full-page ad by one of our autistic parents showing the evidence that the CDC hid documents showing that thimerosal was causing autism in children. It was a neurotoxin. They hid this evidence, and basically the IOM went along with their epidemiological studies that they got from Denmark and other places that did not give the same kind of intense vaccine program that America does. They use vaulted studies. 4 out of 5 were funded by the pharmaceutical companies that made the vaccines. So you can see that there are thousands of parents who are enraged, who are hurt, who feel frustrated that their lives have been ruined and their children's lives have been ruined by something that our health agencies are really not fully investigating. And so many studies have come out now. We've had wonderful researchers come to our aid, Dr. Richard Deeth and Dr. Jill James. These are excellent researchers who have shown that these children have a deficiency of glutathione. They cannot process the metals. There is a certain subset of children who cannot process heavy metals, and they are the ones who are susceptible to getting autism when they get injected with heavy metals. So some of the imbalances that we see in these kids, it's like they've had a train wreck, and then we are left with all the pieces and all the broken parts afterwards to try to figure out what happened to these children. But these are some of the things we find when we test them. They have multiple nutritional deficiencies. They have elevated IgG antibodies to gluten and casein. The mercury seems to knock out some enzyme that is in the gut that is required to break down wheat and milk, the large peptides that are in wheat and milk and soy, and these children cannot handle it. 95% of the kids will get better if you take away wheat and milk and soy from them. And this is one of the main things that those of us who are working in the field are trying to help parents understand, that the guts are inflamed. These children's guts are inflamed, and they are unable to absorb nutrients to become healthy as long as they're eating these foods. They're like poisons to them. Actually, I don't think bread and milk is good for many of us, but some of us absolutely cannot tolerate it. And I can't tell you the hundreds and hundreds of letters and posts I have received over the years, because in my book, I stress how important it is for parents to take this diet away from them. And the doctors, often mainstream doctors, don't believe that diets or vitamins make any difference. And the parents will say, 3 days after they take milk and wheat away from the kids, they're getting eye contact for the first time. The kids stop flapping their hands. They start relating. It's totally miraculous. And it's a very easy therapy that parents can do without finding a doctor who is specializing in this. Because of the gut inflammation, most of them have yeast in the gut, and they have bacterial infections. So the imbalanced gut flora is very prominent in these children, and we can do tests that show the metabolic byproducts of these bugs that are in their gut, the yeast and the bacteria. They show myelin sheath injury in the brain, and they show many evidence of immune impairments and methylation disorders. Methylation controls the folic acid cycle, and many of them continue to have the myelin sheath impairment because methylation is required to get myelin in the brain. They have an inability to excrete the toxins and metals. Dr. Amy Holmes, one of our DAN doctors, did a hair study, and on newborn babies who have autism, they show no mercury excretion at all. All of us are breathing in and eating mercury all the time. It's in the air, it's in the fumes, it's in a lot of things. We have immune systems that can handle it, and we excrete it, and normal kids excrete it too. The autistic kids hold it. You'll do a hair analysis or a various kinds of tests, element tests, and they do not excrete it, and they get sicker and sicker. And so we have therapies where we do give them chelating agents, detoxification agents, and we have healed a lot of kids from autism by getting the heavy metals out of their bodies and by resupplying them with the proper nutrients that they're not getting because of the inflamed guts. There's a lot of ideas of the causes of models. The popular scientific idea that it's simply a genetic disease. And we believe that it is a combination of a genetic plus an environmental toxin, primarily heavy metals, but it can be viruses, it can be other things too. Gastrointestinal gluten casein intolerance and the enzyme deficiency and the yeast overgrowth, that's considered a model for autism. Toxic chemicals, heavy metals, vaccinations, amalgams. Most of the dentists where I live on the East Coast and the West Coast, a lot of the dentists are mercury-free now. They will not put amalgams in because amalgam gases out and shows. If you have amalgams in your mouth, if you have more than three amalgams in your mouth, it's going to be pretty sure that you have a higher chance to get neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's and that sorts of thing because you're constantly eating a poison and it's outgassing poison. My daughter had a big amalgam break when she was 4 months pregnant with Chelsea, and that was replaced with more amalgam, and we think that's where Chelsea got her first hit of mercury, and of course she had all her vaccinations also. But it's very interesting that the CDC is happy to put out a notice to not eat too much fish, but they don't say anything about injecting mercury into newborn babies. They are avoiding that, and they're being called to that. And now we have eight senators on our side who are demanding an investigation and demanding that the CDC open up those files that they've hidden, and some of them were even destroyed. So we're getting more and more very confirmed scientific studies that this poison and thimerosal is poisoning our children. So there's a big battle going on, and it will probably continue because they have vested interest in maintaining the vaccine program as it is, even if it poisons one out of 80 to 150 children. Viral model is also considered. Viruses are still a big mystery, and we're working on that one. But we also treat the kids with a lot of antivirals, too. This is a panel, some of you who are interested in the immune system. It's a panel that I worked out with Immunosciences Laboratory in Beverly Hills. It really checks the status of the immune system. I won't go into it. It has a viral screen that checks all the viruses, the immunoglobulins, and really checks the status of your immune system. And these are screens that we do when we get the autistic kids to see the status of their immune system. Measles is also implicated. What happens with children, they have a 1-2 blow. They first get the hepatitis B vaccination at birth, and that sets up a disempowered immune system. And then when they get a live virus in the form of the measles, mumps, and rubella, that causes an inflammation to set up in the body. And Dr. Singh did some very respected research that showed that 70% of the autistic children have anti-myelin basic protein and none in typical children. 57% had adi-neuron and axon filament protein. This shows that brain damage is going on in these children from the autoimmune process, from the measles virus. And they've even done gut biopsies and showed the measles virus from the vaccine strain in the gut. And so Dr. Wakefield, who did this research, has been ousted from, he was a very respected researcher. He got ousted from his standing in an English hospital. And he is now working in the United States with a lot of support from the Autistic Research Institute. In showing that these children have a new gut disease that has never been really documented before. It's called nodular hyperplasia. And when you see the pictures of these kids' guts, they have huge lymph nodes all through their guts, and they're in a lot of pain. And they need a lot of anti-inflammatory medication in order to exist. Dr. Wakefield is highly respected, highly controversial. Gut biopsies, you get them from the cerebral spinal fluid. I don't know what else people need to accept that the vaccine measles do get in the brain and accentuate. If they haven't had the hepatitis B vaccine first, to lower their immune system, they probably won't get measles enterocolitis. So some of the treatments we do for the kids, and I'm happy to stand here and tell you that autism is treatable for people who are sophisticated enough and who don't follow the mainstream doctors who say there is no treatment. And many parents are very proactive, thousands and thousands of parents. Ann Brasher, my friend here, runs a group that has about 3,000 parents on it. I run several groups that together are about 3,000. There are many parents who get on the internet and get themselves educated and don't believe their doctors, and they go find a doctor who will help them treat their kids. These kids need meganutrients because they are undernourished. We have to treat the gut pathologies. A child cannot be happy who has their gut full of yeast and bacteria colonizing and burrowing into the gut mucosa. We correct the methylation dysregulation. This is from methylcobalamin, folic acid, various aspects of the folate cycle. And we detoxify them. And people think this is terrible. They associate chelation with what they do with elderly people who sit for hours with IVs, getting the arteriosclerosis out of their veins. These are not these kinds of therapies. They're oral. They're transdermal. They're sometimes rectal. They do it 3 days out of 14, 3 days on, 11 days off. And the mercury pours out of these kids. And the more mercury we get out of them, the better they get. We have thousands of kids now that have recovered from autism. And when doctors tell people their child is not treatable and to get ready to put them in an institution, they are wrong. And then we do immune enhancement. All of them have defective immune systems. They get sick, and then their body goes into a hyperimmune state. So you'll hear some parents say, oh, my autistic child never gets sick. All my other kids get sick all the time. Well, their immune system is in a hyperimmune state. They still are autistic, though. They may never get sick, but they're not building up the antibodies to the diseases that they need to, that most of us do, so that we can resist it the next time we're exposed to it. So immune enhancement is very important, and antiviral treatment kind of goes along with the immune enhancement. A lot of them do respond to antiviral treatment. We've had some recent things come on, new diets besides the gluten-free, casein-free diet. There's a special carbohydrate diet that helps some kids not get the gut infections that so many of them have. That's very important. Until we can get the gut healed, we can't really go very far with these kids. The methylcobalamin, Dr. Jim Newbrander really realized that the methylcobalamin was the form that goes into the brain and helps the myelin sheath recover. And he instituted that, and last year in the spring, I was speaking at a conference, and I asked three of our pharmacies how many kids, and they gave me the number, 4,500 children were on the injectable methylcobalamin shots. And if you think parents aren't scared, but once they start giving them, they're the tiny little needles, they give them this methylcobalamin, and it helps speech, it helps cognition, really helps the kids a lot. Parents will do anything to get their kids well. And now we have a nasal spray methylcobalamin, and it's combined with folinic acid, and I would suspect that almost everyone with autoimmune diseases would benefit by methylcobalamin treatment. Transdermal detox agents, we have the transdermal DMPS, transdermal DMSA. These are chelating agents that grab the mercury and the lead and pull them out. They go out through the urine and through the feces. Transdermal alpha lipoic acid. Sometimes these agents do cause gut infections, so we're constantly refining and getting better chelating agents. Some newer autism treatments, low-dose naltrexone. It's rather interesting how I came on this. I was speaking to Dr. Ari Vojdani, who is Immunosciences Laboratory in Beverly Hills. And he's a colleague of mine. We've done a lot of organizing and devising tests for the autistic kids, and he's also a specialist in multiple sclerosis. And he said, you know, it's very interesting that the immune panels of the multiple sclerosis patients are very similar to our autistic kids. And I said, oh, really? So the next day, I just happened to get on my internet. In fact, Ann Brasher sent me this, and I had seen it, but I hadn't really paid any attention to it. But she, having Crohn's disease, which she'll tell you about later on, said, this looks interesting. And I said, does it look interesting? If low-dose naltrexone will help multiple sclerosis patients, maybe it will help autistic kids too. So I put out on my list if there were any of my patients who would like to try a new medicine that was non-toxic, that was small dose, that was low cost, and would help their kids' immune system. So I got 15 kids, and I got a few adults too, including me and my husband and Ann and several other rather prominent adults, and we all went on this for 8 weeks. And out of the 15 kids that I put on low-dose naltrexone, 8 had remarkable responses, and 5 were unbelievable, where a 7-year-old boy, his father wrote and said, I have a relationship with my son for the first time in his life. Usually the autistic kids get attached to the caregiver, the mother, and they don't pay any attention to the dads or the siblings or anyone else. Well, this was a bonus. And actually, naltrexone had been used in autism quite a lot about 10 years ago because they hoped that people could take naltrexone instead of going on a gluten-free, casein-free diet because it was an opioid antagonist. And they hoped that the opioids that the wheat and milk form in the brain, called gluteo-opioids and caseo-opioids, that they could take naltrexone. But it didn't ever work very well, and they didn't really know why. And then about 10 years ago, Dr. Schifo and Dr. Marchetti in Italy did a showing that the immune parameters did change, plus better behavior. And again, about 8 out of 12 of their kids, but they had some problems with it. It was extremely bitter. The kids, autistic kids, cannot swallow pills very well, most of them. They couldn't get it down them. And they also, at that time, of course, did not know about low-dose naltrexone, and they didn't know about giving it at night. So they were in the study, even though they showed positive changes in some of the lymphocyte subsets and some of the immune parameters, no other studies were done. Very, very interesting. So nothing was done for about 10 years. Naltrexone has been studied, as most of you know. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of studies on naltrexone for narcotic addiction, for alcohol addiction, for various other things to try to understand how it works. And they definitely understand that they act as cytokines and they do affect every cell in the body. But they didn't know really the mechanism. So it just wasn't studied in autistic kids. So you know all this. Non-expensive, available orally. Anyway, because it was so bitter and because we use a lot of transdermal medicines in our children, I worked with Dr. Tyra Smith, who's a molecular pharmacologist at Coastal Compounding in Savannah, Georgia. And he created for me a transdermal cream. He puts pure naltrexone powder without any filler into emu oil, and it goes right in. It's extremely powerful, extremely effective. And parents have shown over and over, going from one line, which is 6/10 of a milligram, to 1 milligram, the child will make a lot of difference. Anyway, this was very effective, and because Dr. Behari's experiments had shown that the endorphins are kicked out, and according to the circadian rhythm, and it's best to take it at night. The parents will rub it on the children's bodies when they go to bed, not when the children go to bed, because the kids are usually asleep by 11 o'clock, hopefully. And the parents will rub it on the kids right before they go to bed, and it works wonderfully. And often the kids, some of the side effects that they would have, they would have a little insomnia for a few days, a little hyperactivity. And in my population of the first 15 kids that I did, I had them on very strict gluten-free, casein-free, soy-free diets. So I didn't have a lot of reactions. Once it got published on the internet, hundreds and then now thousands of kids are taking this. Then some parents who don't have their kids on a strict GFCF diet Some of them would have some reactions, some irritability, some it's almost like they're being withdrawn from their narcotic, because the wheat and bread is like a narcotic with these kids. They get very addicted to it, and some kids will only live on crackers and bread and wheat and macaroni and stuff like that, which is terrible nutrition besides keeping their gut inflamed and besides keeping their addiction going. So anyway, we have this cream, and we started using it with the kids, and we saw a lot of good experiences, and when it started becoming very popular with a lot of other people, then we started having some other side effects. And one very important side effect is that often the kids whose parents would say they haven't been sick in 3 years, they haven't had an infection their whole lives, would get sick. And I was rather intimidated by that. Why are they getting sick? Well, what happens is when they start taking this, the flood of the endorphins apparently destabilize the hyperimmune status that they have established to fight off the constant gut infections they have from the yeast and the bacteria in their guts and and the viruses in their brain. They've maintained some kind of an equilibrium. This destabilizes it for a time. And I got intimidated by that, so I would tell people go down to smaller doses or even stop it. But around that time, I read on the adult list, the naltrexone list, that Dr. Bahari had recommended that you push on through to the full dose. So I started encouraging parents to push on through to the full dose, and the dose for the children is 3 milligrams, or sometimes for some of the little bitty kids that weigh like 25 or 30 pounds, I'll go down to 2 milligrams, and one little kid did wonderfully on 1.5 milligrams, but most of the children are on 3 milligrams, unless they're big kids, teenagers. After 100 pounds, I go up to 4 milligrams, and at over 125, I give them 4.5 milligrams. But the transdermal cream is made up in 3 milligrams per half a cc, and we put them in a medical syringe, and there's on lines, and each line is 0.6 milligram, so they'll start with 0.25 milligram first, and they'll do that for a couple of nights, and now I encourage people to go right up to the full dose. They may have an illness, they'll get a herpes sore, they'll get a cold, they'll get a fever. It's usually very short-lived. No one else catches anything from them. Sometimes they'll get a rash, but it doesn't seem to be contagious. And as I was telling people, oh, you better back down, but the parents would say, but no, he's talking for the first time. He's looking at his dad. He's chasing his brother. And they say, we don't want to go down. So the parents now are saying, oh, boy, my kid's getting sick. That means he's going to have a good effect. Or a parent will say, oh, he's not getting sick. This must not be working for him. So they almost, I mean, how parents kind of take over. They decide what they're going to do, and they plan a weekend when they don't have anything going on, and they give the kids the naltrexone because they're hoping that they're going to get sick, which shows that the immune system is shifting into a more normal state, and then they're going to start having better cognition, better language, and so on. And this is often the case. I would say out of the reports that I have on my database, on my internet list, the improvement is about 75%. And I think many of those who drop out are leaving too soon because they don't like the instability, they can't stand a few nights of insomnia, and sometimes the hyperactivity will last longer. The parents say, this must not be working for my children, because they don't grasp that they have to go through that period of instability. It might be a viral activation, it might be just the immune system adjusting, so it's not handling the load of toxins that these kids all have in their bodies. We don't exactly know why. But I just want to tell you of another new treatment that some of you might be interested in because you deal with your autoimmune conditions or multiple sclerosis or whatever. There's a medicine called Actos. It's a PPAR. And Actos does a very similar thing to what low-dose naltrexone does, and it actually shifts the immune system to what we call T2, which is the autoimmune or allergic state, to T1, which is where the macrophages and the cells directly go and kill the pathogens in the body. And ACTOS is also for brain-gut inflammation. And the combination of ACTOS and LDN has really been extremely helpful for a lot of our children. Shifts from humoral to cellular immunity. And that's what we want. Dr. Boris and his assistant, Dr. Goldblatt, have 300 children on this. And they are also adding LDN to a lot of the kids that are on ACTOS. And these kids are responding very well. It's actually a drug for prediabetes, but it's used now for immune enhancement. For the low-dose naltrexone, you know all this, was FDA approved as an opioid antagonist in 1985. The brand name is Rivia, also generic, used in 50 to 150 milligram doses as opioid antagonist for narcotic and alcohol addiction. All of you know this probably better than I. Must be prescribed and compounded in capsules or transdermal cream. We use it mainly as an immunomodulator, but it also works as a cognitive and language enhancer, and we think that those are the opioid reward systems that encourage kids to be sociable, and we encourage parents when they start this to really follow up and give good feedback. If the kids want to be friendlier or want to get in bed with them, we don't scold them. We don't want to discourage any of those early signs, because these kids have not been relating at all. So when they start relating, we want a lot of good biofeedback and encouragement so that they will continue as a biofeedback mechanism. I believe Dr. Bahari's work was definitely what inspired me, and that brief blockade of the opioid receptors elevates the endorphins. And this study by Bouvard and Lensing at PANSGAP in 1995 showed that there's a normalization of the plasma chemical profiles, elevated norepinephrine, arginine vasopressin, and serotonin. And I think that these elevations continued after their study also. Why they didn't continue working with it is a mystery to me. I've talked to Dr. Pangsep and Dr. Paul Shattuck, who was doing a lot of work on this in England. They were very disappointed that it didn't work as an opioid blocker for the gluten and casein issue in autism, and they kind of went on to other things. Something about the endorphins. They're neurohormones. They modify the nerve cell opiate receptors to neurotransmitters, analgesic. There's different kinds, which Jill talked about, the alpha, beta, gamma, sigma endorphins. The LDN stimulates the endorphin secretion. It almost fools the body into the pituitary into thinking there's going to be a shortage of endorphins. There's a big push of endorphins. And then when it's only a tiny dose, that high rate of endorphin stays in the body 16 to 18 hours. Here's some other things that will stimulate endorphin secretion besides LDN. Vigorous physical exercise, touch, massage, and acupuncture. Laughter, good belly laugh will give you a big shot of endorphins. And chocolate, for those of you who love chocolate. This is a picture of a beta endorphin, which I got from Dr. Davidson. He has an endorphin collection, and the pictures are just beautiful, at Florida State University. Okay, the humoral and the cellular immune balance. We do believe that, and there's a lot of evidence, that autism is an autoimmune disease. I think there's a lot of controversy whether multiple sclerosis is an autoimmune disease. I believe it is, but I think that they've not proven that. They've not proven whether it's a viral etiology or what really causes it. But because of the response of the multiple sclerosis people to LDN, it gives even more plausibility to the idea that it is an autoimmune disease. The T2 creates a lot of antibodies to neutralize foreign invaders, and sometimes they cause more damage than they do good, whereas the T1 is a direct innate cellular response to go straight to the pathogen, a virus, bacteria, or a fungus, and destroy it immediately. Okay. Healthy immunity. I'll hurry. The best immune system is one that's balanced between T1 and T2, and it switches back and forth as the body needs it. An inability to respond adequately to T1 leads to chronic infection and cancer. The overactive T2 response plays a role in autoimmunity and allergies. Unhealthy immunity, failure of the T1 arm, and overactive of the T2 arm causes AIDS, chronic fatigue syndrome, candidiasis, multiple allergies, and chemical sensitivities, cancer, and autism. I am doing a study. This is the study that I told you about already. Schifo and Marchetti showed that LDN produced significant reduction of symptoms in 7 of 12 ASD kids, a significant increase of T CD4 CD8 helpers, and reduction of T suppressors, and the natural killer cell level was inversely related to the plasma opioid levels. Therapeutic use in ASD, we use in tiny doses, as I said, regulates mood, modulates, all this is repeating. We increase the natural endorphins toward T1 immunity. So this first study I've already told you about, 74% had enhanced sociability, mood, cognition, and language. 15 to 20% had frequent early infections followed by improvements. And this was self-reported on my list. Anybody can go on that and find it if they want to read up on that. I'm doing a current clinical study, 16 weeks. I'm halfway into it. I have 93 people in this study, 30 children, 70 adults. The parents are mainly moms or close relatives. We're checking the genetic influence of this. I do a weekly tracking sheet. And the immune panel that I did prior to the starting LDN and that I'll do again at the end of the study this is the track sheet. These are the 17 things that I have people give me a list every week. This is the panel. CBC, metabolic chemistry panel, lymphocyte subsets, the CD4, CD25 T cells. This is what I was asking Jill about. These are the regulator cells. My working hypothesis is that if the kids have primarily a genetic influence, that they may have to stay on LDN to stay well, that if the CD4, CD25 regulator cells come in and start operating, that they won't have to after the 4 to 6 months that it takes for the immune system to get normal with this treatment. These are some of the cytokines. Natural killer cell level, very low in all the kids and the parents too. MOG is a myelin oligodendrocyte glycoprotein antibody, and the neurofilament antibodies. These are brain antibodies, and we want those to go down because the kids are showing damage. This is Chelsea now. She's 12 years old. She's a tough responder. But she's wonderful. She inspired my book, sold 35,000 copies already, gone all over the world, being translated into Indonesian and Chinese. I'm going to Israel to teach the doctors there as soon as I leave the conference this week. I'm going to Hong Kong to teach the doctors there on how to treat autistic children. And low-dose naltrexone is definitely one of the new tools in my black bag. I think it's a winner, winner, winner. And we'll be learning more about it when I get the studies back in the middle of June. I will be sure and report it to Dr. Gluck and others who are interested to show what LDN does to the immune system with 16 weeks of use. Thank you very much. Questions?
Yeah, so we have 10 minutes for questions.
Yes. Is this a microphone? Hello? Hello? No, that's a light. I'll just lean over like I've been doing.
I just, with continued use of the naltrexone, or what do you think about that?
You know, PANDAS is a huge issue. OCD is one of the biggest problems and the most recalcitrant of anything. We were just talking about it in the think tank. And I must say that I have not used LDN with PANDAS. None of the PANDAS kids are in my study. That's for a future study. But it's a real challenge. And, you know, antibiotics, we have to give them. We hate antibiotics, but we have to give them. Yes.
First of all, I want to thank you for coming, because this has been incredible, this experience, Dr. Gluck and Dr. McCandless. This is wonderful. I have some genetic background just to tell you. My son is autistic. He's 5. My mother has multiple sclerosis. My mother-in-law has Crohn's disease. Oh. So if that doesn't tell you, the whole family's going to go on LDN. No, but I do have a question. My son, actually, we have been blessed with being very proactive and out there getting things done for him. and he is gluten casein free diet, and he has been chelating for a year and a half, and we have seen tremendous progress. And we are 2 months into low dose naltrexone, which is what I have a question for. We have seen some improvements right off the bat from him. In the first 2 weeks of the low dose naltrexone, we saw a decrease in his obsessive compulsive behaviors, and then within the first month, just to let you know, verbally he was doing pretty well, but it's surface verbal behavior, if you understand that conversation never goes very deep with an autistic child, usually. He started telling me what his likes and dislikes were, that he did not like PE and why, that he liked music and why. My mouth is dropped as he's telling me, and I'm crying hysterically, trying to just listen and have my child not freak out because I'm crying when he's talking to me. But then he tells me, and this one helps because a lot of children with autism have fears of unusual situations, noises, loud levels of music. It can be anything, really, and you're not real sure why they're having their tantrum, but they're having it. He began telling me why. A baby was crying in the mall, and he said, "Mommy, the baby's crying scared me." And again, I'm shocked. "That's okay, honey. Baby's crying scares a lot of people because we don't know how to, you know, how to make it better." So he is, and my question to you again is, he got put on the low-dose naltrexone in a liquid formula. We have a wonderful doctor, pediatrician, who is focusing, Dr. Arnold Brenner, up in Randallstown, Maryland, and started him on the low-dose naltrexone, and I believe it's a 50 milligrams that's suspended in a liquid, and I'm giving it to him, started out with 1 milliliter, moved up to 3 milliliters. My question is, do you think that the transdermal formula is a better choice, or you know, we are seeing some results, but do you have any idea as to whether your opinion on that?
Yes, I have a pretty strong opinion about that. In fact, even I learned a lot from the adult low-dose naltrexone list, and they say that there will be a deterioration of the liquid, and you won't be able to keep it in solution. The cream is wonderful. It goes in immediately. Please tell Dr. Brenner to start using this.
Okay.
I heard good things about Dr. Brenner, and I wondered why he was using the liquid when this available for $19 a month plus shipping. You can get the cream, and you don't have to worry about.
Do I need a prescription for that cream from Dr. Brenner?
You can get a prescription from Coastal Compounding, and
okay.
Coastal Compounding will give any pharmacy his formula for this cream.
Okay.
And all you have to do is call him. Coastal Compounding in Savannah, Georgia.
Okay.
And the cream, it has no smell. It goes in really fast. You put it on your baby before when you go to bed.
Right.
So they don't have to taste any of this stuff.
Right.
So there's no reason why anyone would use the liquid in my estimation.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah. Yes.
What's the phone number?
I don't have the phone number. That's why I gave you the name. It's in Savannah, Georgia. Just call information and ask for Coastal Compounding. I tried to look for it. I was sorry I didn't bring it today. But they will give you the formula. Any registered pharmacist, they will give you the formula. And it's pure naltrexone powder with MU oil. It goes right in. Yes.
With all the children that have ADD or ADHD and they're on Ritalin or whatever, how would you wean them off and start them on the low-dose naltrexone, or do you just say stop the Ritalin and then go to low-dose naltrexone, or do you treat them with low-dose? I mean, you're talking about autism. Go to the masses of, you know, when I had a young child, I think three-quarters of his class is on Ritalin, and how do you sequence them off Ritalin, or do you do that?
I, of course, dislike Ritalin tremendously and don't have any child on it, but if I did, I would just wean them off. Any prescription medication should be weaned down slowly and, you know, cut it in half for a few days, and then you cut it in a fourth, and then you stop it. And then I would start the low-dose naltrexone right away. There's no contraindication between Ritalin and low-dose naltrexone, but I think that if you use the low, only maybe 15 to 20% of the children that are on stimulants would need to be on them if the parents would be willing to give them vitamins that provide them the precursors to their neurotransmitters. So those are the two things I would do for attention deficit disorder.
You talked about the methylcobalamin B12, and anybody on who has an autoimmune disease, you would take the nasal spray. Did you say autoimmune disease?
I think so, because the folate cycle is impaired. I mean, almost all of us really do need methylcobalamin, but anybody who has any kind of immune impairment or are compromised immunologically in any way will benefit. And we have seen kids start to talk after they have their first methylcobalamin injection. And now that we have a nasal spray, it's much more available to a lot of people. Again, this has to be compounded. Even though it's a vitamin, it needs to be compounded. But all of our pharmacies that deal with autistic children are putting out thousands and thousands of these. So it's very easy to get. It's not terribly expensive either. So I highly recommend all of you who have anything to look into that. Yes?
What studies have been done in AD and ADHD on using low-dose naltrexone?
None. No study has been done on ADHD with low-dose naltrexone. Low-dose naltrexone is a new drug, and the only studies that were done 10 years ago were trying to look at the opioid antagonistic effect. This is all people who want to treat autistic children and children who have developmental delay are trying many, many things that a lot of studies haven't been done for, as long as we know that they're safe. I don't have the restrictions that Jill has, because I write prescriptions for thousands of people for low-dose naltrexone because I think it's safe, it's inexpensive, it's effective, and a lot of doctors are afraid to do anything that's against mainstream. At 74, I'd like them to try to take my license away. It just gives the drug more notoriety. But no studies have been done. There will be, but not yet.
I mean, you're legally allowed to prescribe any drug you want off-label.
Yes. I'm legally allowed to give off-label, yeah. And it's a compound, and the compounders are legally making it, so I'm not doing anything illegal. But people who are under academic restrictions have more limitations than I do.
We have 2 minutes left for questions.
Dr. McCandless, marvelous breakthrough work, and congratulations. I have to ask you a question, just a side issue. The parent takes the cream, squeezes it out of the syringe, rubs it into the child's skin. At the same time, they're acquiring the LDN also, are they not, through their
yes.
skin? Have you got any reports of incidents?
Yes, I have.
Could you
Some
tell
parents
us about that?
Say they're feeling much better, so they want a prescription too. A lot of the parents are on it. In fact, when I put out this request for this research study, I thought maybe 10 or 12 people might answer. I was flooded with applications from parents who wanted to do this study. I had to cut it off at 106 because I had gotten Coastal to say they would pay for the medicine and that Dr. Vojdani would give them a $900 immune panel for $300, and they're all willing to do it, $300 going in and $300 going out. So, yes, some of the parents do have effects, and some of the parents who had bad effects stopped eating gluten and wheat and milk and got better. So, yes, there's a lot of correlation between the parents' problems and the kids' problems. Any other question? Yes.
Do you have any information about how rapidly it's absorbed through the skin and how long it lasts and what its effects are on the receptor by that method?
I don't have any scientific explanation, but I can tell you with thousands of kids, they react immediately. Within 15 minutes, we'll see a change in behavior. We believe it goes in faster than it will orally. Most of these kids have gut inflammation, and they don't absorb much in the gut anyway. So we do everything transdermally that we possibly can. We have about 6 or 7 medications that we put on transdermally. So our genius compounders have found ways for it to go right in. And for some of the bigger molecules, like the DMSA, we have to use DMSO, which burns and smells. But the emu oil, the naltrexone, is a tiny molecule. It goes right in. And I give it every day, so I don't know whether it would last longer or not.
Do you have them wash the area in the morning so they're not having a sustained effect?
No, because it goes in. It doesn't have any odor. It doesn't sting or anything. No, they don't have to wash it off. Yes.
I'm a mom. I'm not a medical professional. So please, all of you, please forgive me, but I'm a little bit lost on a few things. My son is 6. He is autistic. He is doing the methyl B12 injections. We have not yet gotten to chelation. But we're trying to determine whether or not to chelate next or do the LDN next, because we take everything very slowly.
I would not, there's no contraindication to doing LDN and the chelation at the same time. So I would just go ahead and, you know, I generally say start one thing at a time. I would chelate him for, say, a couple of weeks and then start the LDN or do the LDN for a couple of weeks until they get through that instability period. because if you start them both at the same time, you don't know why he's being hyperactive or whatever.
Right.
But I there's no problem doing them together.
Can
in
you
fact,
please tell
so
me?
We have a time window on these kids. I say do everything. We do everything we can. You
hit
guys
them with
who
as
have
much
kids
as possible.
Know that.
Can you please tell me when you were talking about the Actos, what in the world does PPAR mean?
Well, you got me. I don't remember what I did know it, and I could read it off to you, but I don't remember. It is a
is that
I'm
the
sorry.
Method of
because we're running out of time for questions, and this is about a different drug. Yes, Actos. I'm going to ask that we just limit questions to LDN right now because we're actually at our time limit for Q&A for this talk.
Yeah, so come later and I'll give you that information.
Yeah, please talk offline. Anyone
I have another question if you don't
about
mind.
LDN and autism? We're going to extend the Q&A if anyone has other questions about
yes.
LDN and autism.
I'm still finishing my question, please.
Great.
So then I guess here again, as being someone who doesn't understand the medical background of this, I understand why being on a strict diet first, which he is, why the opioid antagonist would then work. But what is it about an endorphin release over a long period of time that we think is helping these kids? All I know about endorphins is that, they're the happy things that make you feel good. But what does that do then, other than elevate his mood? How do we think that this is working in terms of getting them to talk more and be socially aware and all of those things?
Well, it's a neurohormone. It's a neurotransmitter, basically. And the kids, when they have an autoimmune process, we think that they have a shortage of endorphins. There's not enough. So when we're giving them more, they're getting the body flooded with these immune, well, they're basically cytokines that are stimulating the immune system. But we have a lot of evidence. I already have some evidence that the natural killer cell level is going up. So if the immune system is getting better, everything gets better. Yes.
How critical is time to treatment from diagnosis?
Pardon me?
From once the child is diagnosed with autism, how critical is it to get them onto treatment quickly?
Well, we do have a window, and the younger we treat them, the faster they respond to everything. So as soon as you get the diagnosis, the first thing I would do would be to start the diet and then start all these other things that I'm talking about. The three-year-olds respond. If I can get a three-year-old, I can have a mainstream by the time they're ready for kindergarten. But if I get a seven-year-old, I can't guarantee.
Is there an age beyond which you'd say you're wasting your time?
No age beyond which they won't get better, but it's very hard to turn a child around after 10 or 11, very hard. Occasionally it happens, but it's hard. After the brain's been messed up that long, it's very, very difficult to turn some of those systems around.
So
but it's always worth trying.
You can get somebody diagnosed with autism into mainstream school with the therapies that you're giving?
Yes. Give me a three-year-old, and I'll have him in kindergarten by the time he's six.
That's great.
My son, Dean, is going to kindergarten next year. He's going to be six, just turning six in July. But he's diagnosed at age three, but he's going in with no aid to a regular kindergarten.
It's
and
amazing.
And that's all the diet and the chelation and everything. So thank you.
That it? Thank you very much.